Right now it is time to join our friends at theberkshireedge.com. You'll find theberkshireedge.com on the internet 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, updating stories about South County and adjacent areas, entertainment calendars, event calendars, and more. And we are joined on a Wednesday morning by both of the participants who put this magazine together. That is David and Marcy. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, wait a minute. Marcy is turning
out. Good morning.
There we go.
Yes.
There she is.
She was in Marcy was in stealth mode.
She was.
Sometimes we have to go to. Sometimes it's good for us to be in stealth mode.
Being in there, I am. I'm exhibiting myself. No, that's not the right word.
Well, what the heck? It's close enough anyway.
Right.
Well, anyways, the BerkshireEdge.com is where you can go to find out stories. So we just touch on a few stories every week, but there's just literally a trove of different information that you can find at the BerkshireEdge.com. We'll start off, though, with your third installment of the situation of the workers in the so-called, quote, cultural, end quote, economy in the Berkshires.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, you know, we have, you know, the Berkshires like to label themselves America's premier cultural resort. You know, and so this is a series of articles written by Sheila Clary looking at how the actual workers in this cultural economy are faring these days. It's not well.
No, there's a group, you know, I mean, after the Black Lives Matter, then, you know, I mean, there have been a number of groups. Then there was apparently a group that began last summer called Change the Museum. And then finally, in mid-February, a group began in the Berkshires called Change Berkshire Culture, also known as CBC. And they invited cultural workers in the Berkshires to share stories of ill treatment, pay inequities, and bias. And they have gotten, I mean, so far they have 1,527 followers and 65 posts as of the day this article was written yesterday. And at the same time, a number of, you know, representatives of a number of organizations are getting together to try. There are like something like 32 organizations that are participating, and you know, in an effort to change Berkshire culture. And they also have a GoFundMe where they're trying to raise small amounts of money. I mean, they're trying to get to $5,000, and then they will be able to give out grants of about $500 to 10, obviously 10 different people, you know, to help nonprofit and cultural workers who have been displaced by the pandemic. But it is, you know, I mean, it's been a kind of a wake-up call to a number of institutions that their employees are not, you know, are feeling exploited. It was probably started by the Black Lives Matter, but here in the Berkshires, this is not a racial issue. Not solely a racial issue. It's much more, you know, the fact that the cultural workers are not necessarily all people of color. And for example, the employees at Mass MoCA are unionizing. So it's not just people of color, but it is people who work in the cultural sector who feel that they're really underpaid.
It's a story that when you compare it to big business like Amazon, okay? When Amazon comes into an area, they hire people. Yes, they hire lots of people. And yes, they do allow people that have small businesses to sell on Amazon. And so those people, but the people that they hire and the people that work there, they're trying, that vote is being counted now down south to try to form a union. And it's not necessarily about pay. It's about a lot of other things. But when you look at nonprofits and you look at our area and you look at how important nonprofits are to the economy in this area. We here at Robin Hood Radio at Tri-State Public Communications, we have two full-time employees at the radio station. Mm-hmm. Three full-time employees at the radio station.
In addition to you and Jill.
But Jill and I put money in and we don't take money out.
David and I have the same relationship.
Thing. But we also have three full-time employees at the Bargain Barn and some volunteers. And everybody that works with us, we've been at $15 an hour. We don't have many other benefits that we can offer, but we've been there for a while, and everybody gets a cost of living wage. But still, for the theaters that have to run quality shows because they have for years, and for all the different cultural sites, it's a different matter. Their number of employees is so high. Yet you want them paid properly, but then how is that going to transfer into actually happening? Will people pay more for ticket prices? There's a lot of questions.
And Marshall, you know, ticket prices don't cover the whole cost.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
Typically for nonprofits, you know, ticket prices are maybe 25% of their revenue. So it's they're dependent on the generosity of supporters, donors.
It's like us. I mean, we have three forms of really income: donations from individuals, corporate underwriting, and business underwriting, and then we do have two or three national grants. Okay, our bills go up because power, electricity, heat, electric, all that go up. We have limited resources where we can go to get money. We really can't. We don't take any loans out of this business because it's just not. You just don't do that. So I mean, there's so many different parts to this problem that really government should get involved. Local governments should get involved in state and regional governments to assure that our way of life can continue and people can continue to work at these venues because they are important. They're so important to our area. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, this is in this area, we're a cultural resort, and this is an important issue.
Yeah.
Right.
This is like a major part of our, in a way, a part of our economy. It's a serious issue about how the workers are treated, and in these cultural organizations that receive so much publicity, but on the other hand, the workers themselves, their employees, are apparently having a tough time.
They have to have a tough time if the people that employ them have a tough time. Just imagine how tough it is.
The
people.
Well,
there
also, there is a little note within this article that the employees are making a tiny percentage of what the senior management are making. So I think that there's an equity issue as well. The directors of several of these organizations are making very good money, while everyone else is making very bad money. So I think that there's a disparity in, fairness about this.
And some of the, Mass Mocha, they're talking about unionizing.
Yes.
It's something that has to be looked at by and brought the well. The good thing about this is it's being brought to everybody's attention.
Yeah.
And it's going to be one of those things where nonprofits, the people who staff these nonprofits, and local community leaders and business leaders, and also politicians, are all going to have to get involved and work this out.
Right.
So it's at least equitable. It's not going to ever be perfectly fair, but at least so it's equitable.
Yep.
Now we can go on to your second story, because this is a great idea. Great Barrington has come up with a program to welcome new residents, and also by welcoming them, show how to connect to the different resources within the town.
Yeah. Is this Tim Newman's website that we were talking about?
No, we're talking about it's a website that the town has, well, Tim's involved, but
yeah.
It's a great idea to... it's called Project Welcome, and it invites new Great Barrington. It shows Great Barrington residents how to take advantage of all the resources that are here, and it's hosted by the town. So which sponsors get-togethers via Zoom. I think it's kind of like an online welcome wagon. You know?
Right.
It's interesting. I mean, it was an interesting idea that this is an outreach from the town hall and to welcome a lot of new residents who are, you know, have fled here because of the COVID epidemic, but then they feel quite isolated from actually what's life here.
Right. Especially, now. It's hard to buy. It's hard to, to buy a new house here and, feel part of the community at the best of times. But now, when you can't even meet people. This is part of a welcome project within the Community Development Corporation.
The town has created a new residence page on the town website, so you could get you can sign up there and get alerts, emails about upcoming events in the town.
I'm gonna show my age here. Do you remember Welcome Wagon?
Yeah.
Yes.
Every town, just about every town, talking years and years ago, probably up to 20 years ago, someone was a welcome wagon agent, and they would have these packages that they would meet new residents with, leave them at the houses, with gift certificates and And so,
yep.
But that doesn't exist anymore. Realtors try their best to do that when people come in and buy new houses. But there's so much more that's involved than just what the welcome wagon used to do. Like you said, you would like people to gain immediate access to what's available to them with all the social service programs, with all health programs, government town meetings, and all that. So I think it's a smart idea, and I think it's a good idea during these times.
Well, we know that there is a man named Tim Newman who is also developing a whole website for newcomers. I mean, not just what's on this town, I don't know that it's been launched yet, but it's a very extensive set of resources for people who are new to the community. As soon as that's ready to go, we'll have to, we'll publicize it also, but. This is really a recognition of the fact that we have lots of new people, and they will be a wonderful resource for the community. I mean, this is not just a one-way street of the community trying to, make these people feel good, but having all this new talent in the Berkshires is really going to be wonderful for all of the towns and all of the organizations. It means, new board members, new volunteers, and many of them are younger people than who have been buying houses before.
Yeah.
So, it's wonderful to welcome them.
And your next story is a story that I think we'll be hearing about for a while, and that is the Citizens Campaign, once again to block the creation of that PCB dump in the town of Lee.
Yeah, that's right. Citizens have filed a lawsuit against the select board, because this select board there, the selectmen in Lee, have signed off on a toxic waste dump along the Housatonic River, and so there people are saying, "Wait a minute, we don't want a PCB carcinogenic dump in our community, which will in the future cause all kinds of problems for us," and so they filed suit against the select board
for voting for it.
Yeah, for approving it. So this is a continuing saga of the cleanup of this 30 year process. It began in 1992. The cleanup of the Housatonic River of the PCB contamination that was left there by General Electric, the General Electric capacitor manufacturing up in Pittsfield, where they used the pyranol and oil to lubricate the transformers, these huge electric transformers that they were making, and they would just dump the residue of this pyranol, which is a carcinogenic insulating fluid, into the Housatonic River, as well
and
as
all
as well as into the grounds of the GE complex there.
Right.
So this has been many decade effort to deal with the consequences of that behavior, and this is only
and
the latest.
Some, but now, but the latest is that they, they want to create a dump in the town of Lee, and put all these PCBs in it, and the townspeople.
The sediment, yeah.
Are concerned because these things leak and they're going to leak into their groundwater and they're very
and leak back into the river.
Yes, right, that too. And so they feel that the town representatives too hastily voted to accept this, and so they've hired a lawyer named Judy Knight, who also several years ago ran for Berkshire County District Attorney. She's alleging that the members of the select board violated the town's own bylaws by signing an agreement to locate a PCB dump in Lee.
Right.
And that they didn't, and they also violated the state open meeting laws because they met behind closed doors.
Well, it's a story that that's going to have
a NIMBY story,
it's going to have legs, and you know what? I don't necessarily agree in always going to court, but I think something like this needs to really be looked at not only by the company and the EPA, which comes up with the solution, but the people who actually live in the area as well.
Of course, there is suspicion that there is a lot more cancer in Pittsfield as a result of this PCB having been deposited all over the town.
And so this is this is just the right way of those people to get in there.
And by the way, the PCB contamination, the Housatonic River flows south.
Oh, it goes right down through our area.
Right to you.
Yeah, it goes right. No, that's the whole. That's why people. That's why people in this area should follow the story, because PCBs don't go away, and they do.
No, they're. They have a half life of forever.
Yeah. So, Well, I want to talk.
That's only half. Right?
Well, I want. We only have about 5 minutes left, and I want to get on to the next story, which is what's going on with the Great Barrington Fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Well, this is a another issue. The Great Barrington Fairgrounds has been been purchased by a couple, Bart Elsbach and
Janet.
And Janet, yes. And the question is, what they what are they going to do with it? And it's been a long battle.
Because they've really done nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
And it doesn't, you know, because it's a nonprofit organization, it also pays no taxes. So they bought it. They had ideas of stuff they were going to do, but they never did. And now the town has, you know, there's an idea floating around that the town should buy it and turn it into a park. And apparently they cannot get the Elsbachs to come to the table to discuss it. So the story that we wrote is that the town actually, you know, members of the select board are expressing frustration against the Elsbachs. But the real story is that we have this, you know, this piece of land that is an eyesore, and it could be very useful for the town.
And it's
It was a racetrack for many years.
And it's right at the southern entrance. It's right at the southern entrance of the town.
Yeah, it's across from Guido's and the Big Y, and you know, so that everybody who comes into Great Barrington from the south drives right by it, and the old buildings are in poor condition, and it's just not being used now. It's not a commercial property because it's a floodplain, so it's very hard to build on it. But
yes, there was some talk years ago of actually building a hotel on that property, and that didn't come to fruition because they can't build such a structure on this property because it's a floodplain.
Right.
So they couldn't get a an environmental permit to do it. So,
but we should move along to the last couple of stories.
Yeah, let's go on to the COVID pandemic restrictions.
Yeah, this is very interesting. You know, last summer, in the middle of the summer, when all the restaurants were closed, streets and sort of, you know, central areas of downtown Great Barrington were closed off, and restaurants put up outdoor tables and lighting, and there was music, and it was really quite wonderful. And it saved the restaurants, and so apparently they're going to do this again this year. They're going to create an outdoor environment on Railroad Street, and we have pictures, but if anybody was there last summer, you can see that, you know, they closed off half of Railroad Street last summer. There was still it's a one-way street to begin with, so there was still a lane for cars, but two-thirds of the width was devoted to tables for Railroad Street restaurants. And, you know, on a pleasant summer night, this is really wonderful to be able to go downtown and eat outdoors. And then there were a couple of other parking lots areas behind Main Street, you know, near the movie theater, that were also turned into an alleyways. So it had kind of a European feel. It was terrific. So they're going to do that again. I mean, because the COVID restrictions will still be in place this summer, but the select board is creating again this outdoor dining environment, and I suspect that even after, I mean, if the COVID threat actually does ever disappear, that we're going to continue to do this anyway because people really liked it, and you know, to be able to eat outdoors.
All right. We are out of time, though. We can't get to your last story.
Oh, dear. Okay.
We plan to run out of time.
Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe we could we'll refer to this story, which is a very interesting one that Julie Clary wrote. And
called The Cult of the Smart.
Cult of the Smart.
And it's about how we evaluate
students.
So it's about a book.
Yeah.
So
We'll put it on our list for next week.
All right. And remember, folks, what we talk about here, as you just found out, is just a fraction of what you'll find every day.
We put up six stories a day. So we speak to you.
Or more.
The Berkshire Edge.
We have a lot of news and ideas. I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not just for local residents.
No.
You know, we think the Edge has information that people
and ideas
will be interested in.
All right, and it's there for you 24 hours a day at theberkshireedge.com, and, of course, every Wednesday morning here on Robert Hood Radio. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Hey, Marshall.
Nice. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That is the Berkshire Edge on air, and once again, theberkshireedge.com on the web is where you can access all their information.